Hello.
Hello.
This is Gabriella.
And this is Claudette.
And you're listening to
Erratic Dialogue.
Erratic Dialogues.
Hello, everyone. This is the episode where Gabby and I discuss our favorite cultural products of the year and perhaps try to see how these texts encapsulate this absurd, horrible, but sometimes wonderful year that was 2017. And in many ways, this is the episode where we try to fit in all the discussion we should have been making throughout the year. So this might be like a really bumper episode, if you know what I mean. But hopefully you might be inspired to seek some of these recommendations out. So where should we start? Should we start with movies?
What movies?
Yeah.
Okay, let us begin with film.
What have you seen made an impression?
Well, I've seen a lot of films this year than I've read books or been to the theatre.
Yeah, I think I possibly would say
that. Yeah, I think my brain was just I need to consume something really easily right now and I don't want to think too much about it.
Yeah.
But I saw some films this year that I really liked. Call Me By Your Name, of course, which we've spoken about previously. That's probably my favourite film.
I do think so. I don't know whether I need some distance.
Perhaps,
I mean, it can't be my recentitis happening, but...
But there was no other film this year that I watched and left feeling a sense of wonder at kind of the capacity of film as a medium.
Yeah, and I didn't mention it in the podcast episode where we discussed Call Me By Your Name. But outside the cinema, I just felt so much joy.
Yes.
Being alive, it was hot, and we were at Dendy Newtown, and there were all these people, and I was just like, I just felt so happy to be in that moment.
Or to be alive, or, you know when you, like, sometimes you see a couple, like, kissing, and you're like, ew. But, like, this time I was seeing, like, after the film, seeing couples kissing, I was like, you live your life.
Yeah.
You have your romance.
Yes. Yeah.
But it has the capacity to do that. But, besides that, I mean, before we started, we were talking about what we've seen this year, and I realized that I'd seen a lot of films, but none of them actually came to my mind straight away. I think I've seen a lot of stuff, but none of it's been awe-inspiring.
Right.
Probably my second favorite film of the year is Get Out.
I haven't seen it, so...
Yeah, written and directed by Jordan Peele, which I'm sure, like, most people have seen, and it's been on, like, every best film in 2017 list. But it is really worth seeing. I don't watch horror films. I hate horror films. The only reason I went to see this film is because of you. Like, obviously, it's the kind of film that one should see and the kind of critical reception it was having. But horror movies, I'm terrible at watching them. Like, I jump out of my seat. I'm the kind of person that screams in the cinema.
Yeah.
The person I saw it with was like, can you just, like, calm down? Just restraining me. But it's incredible. Like, it's incisive criticism of American race politics is unbelievable, and it is so self-aware. It's brilliant. It's brilliantly done. It's funny, and it's vicious, but it is very correct in what it's saying. So I heartily recommend that. I think that film, for those who have seen it, it's like, see it on your mind. Like, there's some imagery from that film that I don't think I'll ever forget. It's brilliant. Besides that, I really enjoyed Blade Runner.
I liked Blade Runner, but it's been quite divisive among some of my friends.
I mean, I can understand the criticism that's been leveled at it, like its representation of women, the fact that the film is like a very bloated 3 hours. Its plot isn't exactly like revolutionary. I mean, it was in some ways, but it was, nothing really happens. But it is visually incredible.
Oh,
the soundscape was just like unbelievable. I really enjoyed it. I don't think I would rewatch it in the same way that I'd rewatch the original Blade Runner. It wasn't as kind of philosophically powerful, but, it was good. I also liked Okja? The Korean...
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. As I was watching this film, there were quite a few moments where I thought, this is really annoying or, like, overdone or a bit kind of... I don't know, parts of it really cheesy. But actually it stayed with me for quite a while after I watched the film. I kept thinking about it. And it's interesting to compare it to Blade Runner, because with Blade Runner I really enjoyed it at the time, but it just completely left my head afterwards. With Okja, I didn't really enjoy it so much at the time, but it really seared itself into my memory in its representation of, like, animal rights.
Is it like a dark babe?
It's like a kind of a
unfair sort of.
I mean, babe is sweeter. Okja's more like technicolor. It's like a technicolor babe.
Right.
Yeah.
Like an anime babe, but in, yeah. like, in played out.
Yeah. I mean, this is just, like, this performance by Jake Gyllenhaal, which, like, does not need to exist. but, it, like, Tilda Swinton is also really, like, the one time I did not like Tilda Swinton in a film. It's just, like, really bizarre, but yet, like, really affecting. Like, if you watched this film when you were 10, like, you would become vegetarian. Mm. It's very emotionally affecting. But, yeah, it kind of stayed with me. Killing of a Sacred Deer, also, which I know you saw.
Yeah, and this is Yorgos Lanthimos. I might be, like, absolutely brutalizing his name. But anyway, he is a little bit of an extremist director. Mm. His film Dogtooth and the Lobster are these sort of, like, searingly dark comedies. How did you find The Killing of a Sacred Deer match up to that?
I mean, it was such an intense film watching experience.
I was just thinking about your thoughts about the opening shot, is basically a heart, like a sort of somebody's chest cavity pulled open and heart surgery being performed on it.
With some really intense, like, Bach or something happening in the background.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was one of my favorite. It was like, I thought it was just such a, like, striking image.
It's just,
like,
not pulling any punches in the
first. No, I loved it. I actually think that the film, it never really quite met that.
Oh, it doesn't live up to
that shot. Opening shot. I mean, I did. Ooh, yeah. I found it was interesting. Mm. I think it was really harrowing. And I don't know what it says. There's, like, a lot of movie critics that I've listened to said that it was, like, it was a much more extreme film than they were used to, even knowing this director.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because they're, you know, they have children. And I think if you have children, if you've had children, perhaps the film's resonance is probably even more harrowing.
Mm. Well, but, I mean, but some context I think is probably useful.
Yes.
The idea of the film is, it's what if Greek tragedy happened now? So it uses the kind of model of like Iphigenia's slaughtering by Agamemnon. So in the Greek myth, Agamemnon's about to head off to Troy, and some Greek god or another tells him that he has to slaughter his daughter in order to get the wind to blow his sails all the way to Troy. So he kills her, and this is what kind of triggers the tragic cycle. So he gets back from the Trojan War, and his wife Clytemnestra murders him. Then, in order to take revenge for that, Clytemnestra's son murders her, but I don't remember his name. It's what the Oresti is about. Mm. Anyway, yeah, so it's, like, completely inconceivable for these things to happen in our own context. And my one critique of the film is that, like, it didn't make sense. Like, there are so many kind of plot holes within the film that are solved by modernity. But yet, I found it completely transfixing as a thought experiment.
Yeah, I just thought, I mean, it's in its own weird world where, like, everybody sort of seems like they're so disaffected from everybody else. It's like, there's a very sort of absurdist sensibility. Mm. And surprisingly, I think Nicole Kidman, like, absolutely captured the tone so well. I think she was, like, the really successful part of the film. Colin Farrell is really good in it, and there's this other young actor who was in Dunkirk. He was so creepy.
Yeah,
he was just getting amazing performance.
It was, because you totally bought it. Like, you could tell this kid's a psychopath.
Yeah.
But what I like about the film is that it also makes you think about mass hysteria and how kind of the consequences of that. Yeah, it was incredibly intense watching, and it's horrific, but it's more psychological horror than, you know, there's only maybe one violent scene.
Yeah. Mm. Involving somebody chewing off their arm. But anyway.
What about you? What are some films that you really enjoyed this year?
Well, it's funny. It's like, I feel like 2017 was a very quick year. And in that sense, like, I feel like we just recorded Beauty and the Beast and released that, like 2 months ago. But we actually did it in March. And it was like 8 months ago.
Wow.
But it's when I look at the movies that we've seen, and I keep a list of basically everything I consume culturally. But when I look at the movies, I just realize the passage of time, because it's actually this year that we saw Moonlight in January.
No.
So, you know,
it's a completely different context now.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I do think it is really interesting that we started with Moonlight, at least in our sort of cultural consumption, and now we end with Calling by Your Name.
True.
And it's bookended by these absolutely ravishing queer romances. Very, very different.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's kind of telling that in this wonderful year we've legalized same-sex marriage, that this has been an absolutely beautiful year for queer cinema, I think. And, you know, that film is definitely still indelible in my mind. It's such a brilliant exploration of identity and masculinity and what it means to be a gay black man in America. And I thought it was so moving. An amazing performance by Trevante Rhodes and the other two young men who play Little, and of course Mahershala Ali, who is just one of the most beautiful people in cinema currently. Other films that I loved Patterson, Jim Jarmusch's film.
Right, that's a really beautiful film.
It's such a beautiful film. It's about this bus driver played by Adam Driver, and it's not really about much
about
at all. It's about poetry, about making art and trying to muddle through it, through ordinary life. I just think it's this beautifully quiet film about, you know, an ordinary man trying to make his life as artistic as possible with the resources that he has. And I feel like this is more than any other film about, like, making art. This is the reality that is most akin to most of us, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's a really rewarding film in that way.
And also just how it portrays taking pleasure in this process of making art.
Yeah.
Because, you know, usually the narrative that we consume about making art is that
it's an ego-driven narrative.
And that you make it and that you become famous. But this
and other people consume it.
Yeah. It's about the process, not about the product.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really, really beautiful.
Yeah. So you know, it was one of those films similar to Call Me By Your Name when I went out and I looked at everything was poetry, right? I could write poetry about this football in the middle of the road.
This twigs.
Yeah. And it's one of those sort of special films. I really liked Toni Erdmann, which is a German-Austrian, basically it's a 3.5-hour sitcom directed by Maren Aid. And unfortunately, this is probably the only film made by a woman on my list.
Oh, really?
But if there is one, this was a really good one. Mm. It's a beautiful exploration of the relationship between a father and his daughter. And the film is a comedy because it's about this middle-aged man who's trying to get in touch with his grown-up daughter, who's a very serious businesswoman, and she doesn't want to see him. So what he does is that he puts on this atrocious wig and this fake teeth and just hangs around her when she goes to, like, work functions. I mean, in some way you could say this is harassment, but the comedy of it is that Germans are so polite that nobody wants to call out that there's this weird man wearing, like, an obvious wig and fake teeth. And, like, she can't call him out because of the social compact that everybody has.
That's amazing. I really want to watch that.
It was really beautiful. I loved Dunkirk by Christopher Nolan.
Yes, that was good.
I thought it was his most, definitely his most compact film to date. And really elegant for him. Restrained. I thought it was quite effective. Mm. I thought it had one of the best opening shots. Keep talking about opening shots, but maybe I don't know what that says about me. I just remember the openings of films. But I mean, the scene, it opens to these bunch of soldiers walking through this abandoned French town, and a shower of pink pamphlets fall down from the Germans telling them, "You are trapped here and you're going to die." And it was just stunning. It was a stunning shot. It was worth going to cinema just for that. Baby Driver, you saw that.
Yes,
that
I did
was
like Baby
by Edgar Wright.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
I really like Edgar Wright's films. They're just so action-packed and gung-ho, but not in a... maybe because he's English. Like, this is probably his most Hollywood-feeling movie to date. And it wasn't as... I definitely prefer his films in the Cornetto trilogy.
Which are Hot Fuzz, Shaun of the Dead,
and The End of the World. Yeah, Hot Fuzz is one of my,
amazing.
It's a great film.
it's definitely one of the most violent films.
Yeah, but its timing is impeccable. Yeah. Like, its editing is incredible, how it matches up music to editing and scene changing. And Baby Driver was doing similar things. Like, its use of music is great. It's a great soundtrack.
It's almost like a musical, but instead, I mean, there's a bit of dancing, but instead of dance, it is driving.
Yeah.
Driving as a force of, as a form of movement, and treated as if it's a musical. And you have these amazing high sequences where he's basically, Baby is Baby, played by Ansel Elgort, I think. Anyway, he's the driver for these heists orchestrated by Kevin Spacey. Anyway, he's this like sort of amazing driver, and the best part of the film is when he's driving according to a piece of music.
And it's just
one of the most propulsive, exciting things I've seen this year.
It was so much fun. I did very much enjoy it.
And I don't think many people saw it. I didn't really hear a huge amount about it, which is a shame, because I do agree that it's probably his most cliched of his films, his most sort of familiar. And I can't help thinking of the sort of criticism that Linda Holmes had about the film on Pop Culture Happy Hour, where she said she couldn't help but think that Baby was supposed to be played by a black actor.
Of course,
and I
think
the film would have been so much better if that was the point. Like, if it was played by Michael B. Jordan or Donald Glover or something.
It might have
gotten
more attention also if that was the case. Because now it just seems like, okay.
Yeah,
this is just a heist movie with Kevin Spacey. So
I do think it was a flawed film. Definitely the best documentary I saw this year was I'm Not Your Negro.
Yes, that was a phenomenal film.
And I have to thank one of our friends for introducing this film to us, to our attention. This is directed by Raoul Peck, and it's based on the writings by James Baldwin.
Yeah,
he was a writer who was very close friends with Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, and he writes about the civil rights and that sort of heartbreaking litany of where all his friends were murdered and what it means to be the last man standing and what it means to endure this pain as a society, as a community, and what this means. And it was just stunning.
It was, especially how it used archival footage and archival material. Actually, what a thing that I loved about this film was this kind of homage to the archive. And as someone who deals with that kind of stuff, you know, I was like, yes, libraries are fun. They're a place of adventure. Look what you can find in a library. But its kind of use of this footage was just like stunning, you know, and hearing, who did the voiceover?
Samuel
L. Jackson, yes, of course. His voiceover reading the works of Baldwin was just like, it was beautiful. It made the film so human, even though you're just watching archival footage.
Yeah,
really?
To be honest, I could just listen to Samuel L. Jackson read James Baldwin
forever.
Yeah, I just thought, and I did like how it sort of it did feel like this incredibly relevant piece of filmmaking.
That's the tragedy.
Because it talks about Ferguson, and it unites everything in this sort of synthesized whole that I thought was so brilliant.
Yeah, well, that's the most tragic thing, because Baldwin wrote this, 50 years ago, and, you know, they kind of juxtaposed imagery, photos and footage from kind of, you know, white race riots, essentially, from the 60s, and then now. And it's like, well,
what really has
changed? And I didn't know. I was completely ignorant of the fact that, you know, there were these kinds of like pro-white racial supremacy kind of riots in that time. Like, that's a thing that I've...
It seems so obvious
now. But I just...
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Another political film, but a very, very different tone, was The Death of Stalin by Armando Iannucci. I really liked it.
It was fun, but, like, I'd much rather watch, like, an hour and a half worth of The Thick of It than this film.
I don't know. I just... So, The Death of Stalin, as... the title explains, is a comic farce, as one does do, about about the death of Stalin in 1953 and the sort of scrabble for power between Khrushchev and Beria,
some other Russian person,
played by Simon Russell-Beale, who I thought was really good in the film. And so, Gabby, you thought that it just didn't have the sort of propulsive wit of
didn't care, like, and also none of them was like enough of a twit.
They were
all twits, but they didn't like when you watch The Thick of It, like they are so fundamentally stupid, and yet it's hilarious because, you know, forget the protagonist.
Malcolm.
Name. Malcolm, thank you. Malcolm comes and just fixes it, and he's just so incisive. And I don't feel like the death of Stalin had the kind of firebrand insults that I would have liked.
Right. I just thought, I mean, it's incredibly dark subject matter. Mm. And, you know, in many ways, Ainichi just plays it out. Mm. I don't know. I thought it was pretty wonderful, actually.
I mean, it was fun, but I just, like, I didn't care enough about it to tell anybody that I saw this film.
Well, I mean, if you want to laugh and you're politically minded and you like history, I recommend it.
Okay.
Nyabi has, like, a thumb.
A middle thumb. Like, middle kind thumb. Of, like, sees it. I'm like, don't save them. I'm not putting my thumb up. Don't kill them. Just, like, sort of take them off. And
this is my last film, I guess, I will recommend. And I'm actually curious to hear if you actually heard anything about it. The Meyerowitz Stories, New and Selected. It's a new film by Noah Baumbach.
Yeah.
And it's on Netflix. So yes. You can go and watch it anytime now. And I totally recommend it. I think it's pretty wonderful, actually.
I think the first three quarters are really good, but I think it just went on and on and on, and I just did not care anymore. And as the film went on, the scenes became shorter and shorter, and they would have these all these like really short scenes just like suddenly done, like suddenly finished.
I don't know. I just...
I loved the first three quarters. I just didn't care at the end.
I'm interested to see where the turning point was, because I love the scene. Like, you know, I cry in cinema all the time. And, you know, that scene where... So, the Meyerowitz Stories is about a minor artist played by Dustin Hoffman, who unfortunately has a quite inconsiderate ego to his art, and the sort of the ways in which his narcissism has completely shell-shocked his family, in particular his three children, played by Adam Sandler, Elizabeth Marble, and Ben Stiller.
Mm.
And it's all pretty good. He was amazing in that film, that scene where he sort of gives this sort of tribute to his father in a very public space, and he starts crying and like absolutely losing it. And I don't know, I thought it was this really tender film about people trying to connect and the ways in which families can make you feel so alone and the families can wound you in ways that nobody else can wound you.
I mean, there were parts of the film that I really enjoyed. Like, I thought the script was really good. Emma Thompson does a really unexpected performance.
I know. I mean, who thinks of Emma Thompson, Brooklyn Dame? Yeah. But she pulls it off.
Yeah, she did. I thought the performances were really good. I loved the idea of the film, but I think it didn't quite do it for me. I think maybe what we got on Netflix was like the director's cut or something like that.
Because I think everybody watches that.
If they cut out the last 30 minutes of the film, I would have been very happy.
No, I disagree. Anyway, so it's funny. It's two films we end where we don't quite meet eye to eye.
I mean, usually I love his films.
Did you see Mistress America? Because that's my favorite.
Yeah. I really like Mistress America, The Squid and the Whale.
Yeah.
Great, great films.
Yeah.
And what's the other one about the pair of friends?
Oh, Francis Ha.
Francis Ha. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, I really, really like his films. Yeah.
But you weren't really feeling this one.
The first three quarters, great. Last quarter, didn't care.
Okay.
My patience runs out, you know. there's only so much dysfunctional family that I can take.
Well.
And it's like a lesser The Royal Tenenbaums.
I mean, it doesn't quite meet the perfection of The Royal Tenenbaums, but it's a sort of looser, shaggier, less mannered version of The Royal Tenenbaums. Yeah. And to me, that's perfectly good.
Fine.
Okay, so upcoming films, things to look forward to. Is there anything on your list?
That film that is called...
The one with the Guillermo del Toro film?
Yes.
Which is The Shape of the Water.
That's probably the film I'm most excited to see.
I'm so excited. It's coming out fairly soon, maybe in February.
Yeah.
I'm going to see like a preview screening of it. I'm so, so excited.
Lucky.
So this stars Sally Hawkins, and it's set in the 1950s or 60s, maybe the Cold War, and it's basically
a Monster Mash story.
A Monster Mash story, and
the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah, meets Beauty and the Beast in some version. Actually, it becomes kind of a dark romance. Mm. If you see the trailer, you see that, or if you look at the film poster, you know that that's what this is about. And what I love about is the idea that apparently Guillermo del Toro actually pitched to like make The Creature from the Black Lagoon, but he wanted to make it as a romance, and the studios rejected it, so he's like, whatever, I'm gonna make my own film. And I'm so happy that he did, because I think he's one of the most brilliant visual artists of cinema. Just
Pan's
stunning.
Labyrinth is incredible. Yeah.
Pan's Labyrinth, Crimson Peak is like ridiculous, but it is so beautiful. I'm so excited for that film. I'm really excited for Lady Bird.
Yes, I'm excited for Lady Bird too.
By Greta Gerwig. It's gotten some excellent reviews.
I mean, it's like, its reviews have been so good, like, I feel like my expectations are too high. I know. I mean, I don't understand how it could be that good.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to finding out.
I mean, it's got Saoirse Ronan, and apparently Timothée Chalamet is in it. Oh, and apparently he's really good in it. I'm just so excited. I just love Greta Gerwig just in general. Like, some people find her too mannered. But I just love what she does. Mm-hmm. I think she's got this lightness that I think... Anyway, I'm so excited for that. I'm really excited for A Wrinkle in Time, which is directed by Ava DuVernay, who directed Selma. I think it's really wonderful that, you know, that this person of color, who's a woman, she's been given this amazing, huge franchise by Disney. Mm. And you can really see, like, even from the trailers, you can really see a really distinct creative vision. Mm. I'm really excited to see that. I don't know. Did you ever read
the book?
No,
I didn't read them, no.
So it's like the science fiction that explores time travel. It's this very famous YA novel by Madeleine L'Engle. It's quite weird, but I'm really excited to see what she produces with that film. I'm really excited for The Florida Project by Sean Baker. Yeah. He's a director who filmed, and I can't remember the film, but he famously used an iPhone to film it. And The Florida Project has kind of been described as like the Little Rascals set in like today's Florida. And it's all about the sort of disjunct that capitalism and Disneyland has made into the area. And it's about, anyway, it's gotten really, really good reviews.
Cool.
And then the last film that I'm really interested in is apparently Peter Jackson is, his new film is called Mortal Engines, which is based on a sort of steampunk, a post-apocalyptic novel by an author named Philip Reeve. I'm so excited because at the center of Mortal Engines is this character, this anti-heroine called Hester Shaw. And she's kind of like remarkable in her sort of like bloodthirstiness, but complexity. Hmm. Anyway, I'm so excited to see what he does with it.
Sure.
Apparently, it's coming out end of 2018.
Wow.
So, thank you for this discussion of movies.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's and... my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Erratic Dialogues. Read our essays and listen to more episodes by visiting erraticdialogues.com. That's dialogues with a G-U-E-S. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to us on iTunes.